I'm Leah Simone Bowen, the host of Podcast Playlist on CBC. We're a podcast discovery show, and we love a great story. So each week, we highlight the podcasts we think you should check out.
The show is a classic.
Love how they select their topics.
It's great.
And from time to time, we're joined by some of the biggest names in podcasting.
My name is Jamie Loftus.
John Green.
I'm Michael Hobbs.
My name is Nicole Byer, and I have a podcast recommendation.
You can find Podcast Playlist on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Macy Rowe, filling in for Tom Power. Welcome to Q.
I wouldn't have had the chance to find who I am and do the right thing the wrong way if I hadn't had that beginning from Polka, you know?
Yeah, it's not every day you hear a rock god talk about his debt to polka music, but there you have it. That's Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age, Caius, one of rock's great singers and songwriters and sonic pioneers. When it comes to influence, it is hard to overestimate what a huge impact Josh's bands have had on the sound of modern rock music over the past 30-odd years. Queens of the Stone Age have released a new record called In Time's New Roman. And while it has all the trademark riffs and mesmerizing grooves, the lyrics might be Josh's most personal and emotional yet. The last handful of years have been hard on a lot of people, most people. But Josh, he has lost a lot of friends and faced his own serious illness. Tom Power caught up with Josh recently to talk about his new record, paying tribute to his friend, the late Taylor Hawkins from Foo Fighters, and, yeah, why polka is in his DNA. But first, the guys listen to some new music.
From their brand new album, In Time's New Roman, that's Queens of the Stone Age with Emotion Sickness. I saw this quote, and I was hoping you might help me understand it a little bit. You were talking about making this record, and you said, if your roof is flooding, you don't say, we should make a record about this. You have to stop yourself drowning in a flood. I know you started this record a few years ago, and it was unfinished, and you came back to it. I wonder if you could tell me what the flood was, and what made you want to come back to the record?
I've had the luxury of playing music since I was, you know, nine. Yeah. I had my first gig at, you know, 13, and it was at a party with, you know, 18-year-olds and 20-year-olds and all the difficult times being a little kid and going through high school and all these like major transitions where a year is actually a big amount of emotional time, you know. My way of dealing with things that were difficult or sort of celebrating things that I truly loved was by playing music. So that's how I know how to sort of, unpack things that are big moments in my life, you know? And so, this is kind of all I've ever known. That's all I've ever known.
Is that scary for you? I mean, not to get into it too much, but you've gone through an awful lot in the past couple of years. Like, I know you went through a divorce. A lot of your friends have died. When I was doing research for this,
yeah,
like
nine of them, yeah,
nine friends of yours have died. You had cancer. I think you're in the clear now.
Mm-hmm. I am. Yeah. I don't think I've ever grown as much in a short period of time, you know, and I can't help but be sort of thankful for the whole thing, you know, and also, I didn't sign in for, a quiet life. And I think the learning came from these things that occurred, even when it's a death or and you say, oh, that's not my fault. I still have a part in it. I could have done more, and sometimes that's just in how you use your time and how present you are. Am I here now? In a lot of ways, we're all the records and things that I've been able to be part of, those are chapters in a book that's closed. This new record is just the start of something else. I feel it's not that I didn't appreciate it before. It's just I have a new appreciation, which I'm enjoying now. Baby, don't care.
When you say it's scary, is it scary when you're in front of the microphone? What does it feel like in your body when it's scary to sing about this stuff?
Well, I mean, there are times when there are certain songs that I have to be careful how much I focus into them. I have to sort of get my focus out towards the audience because it can be difficult to sing about things that are difficult over and over.
And something really personal, right? Over and over again. You start to relive that stuff, I guess.
If I'm not careful, I sort of get sucked into that. And the funny thing is that these songs are about emotions and experiences you have. And if you're not careful, you accidentally get trapped in the gravity of those moments again. You know, my desire for a performance to be different every night is so strong that it's almost about letting myself be pulled in the gravity of these different moments and being really present in the now so that tonight is different than yesterday, is different than tomorrow. Sometimes it's, you know, fragile and emotional, and sometimes it's covered in blood, and I don't know which one it's going to be. And I like rolling dice like that because I feel like that the audience also, they first have to watch it and decide. It's a bit like Double Dutch. The audience has to watch and decide when to jump in, get into this. And once they do, it's a major commitment. And I do feel like that helps to turn an arena with 15,000 people into a secret meeting too, that it can be like, you know, I often feel like that it's like our parents aren't here, and even though it's Tuesday, it feels like Saturday. I'll turn the lights out and we'll conspire, you know.
What shows were you going to that first gave you that feeling when you were a young person going to shows?
You know, first time I saw TSOL, it was brutal and terrifying. I think the scariest part is that I grew up in a world where physical violence was completely normal.
Really?
And, you know, where it was so commonplace that the fight would break out and people would put their arms out and say, back up, let them finish. Which if you really think about what that means, it's just, it's a terrifying way to spend a Friday and then the Saturday the next day. And then, you know, and also I think it sort of gives you an incorrect vision of what being a man is too, that there's a brutality attached to it. I do think there is a brutality attached to being a man, but I don't think it should be at the forefront of how you identify yourself as a man, you know. But I growing up and watching, going to see the Dwarves play, I don't know if you know the punk rock band, the Dwarves, or going to see Iggy or the Cramps.
This one's dedicated to all you Gucci bag carriers out there. It's called You Got Good Taste.
Where you just don't understand what's going to happen. You know, and I liked that growing up listening to the Doors. It was the first time I recall being scared by rock and roll music.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
Where it's painting a picture where you feel uncomfortable. and a sense of eeriness surrounding you. I love all that imagery. It feels like an important part. How can you can't just say you love someone all the time, and you can't just say you're angry all the time. There's also this sort of magic of saying, I don't know what's out there.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in the woods, you know? But I think it's just as valuable.
If you give this man a ride, sweet family will die. Killer on the road.
Yeah. I'm AC Rowe, sitting in for Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, more of Tom's conversation with Josh Homme.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm AC Rowe, sitting in for Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of Tom's conversation with Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age. In this next part, Tom wanted to ask about his late friend, Taylor Hawkins, drummer for Foo Fighters, who died a couple of years back. Dave Grohl put on a huge tribute concert at Wembley in London for Taylor, and Josh was among the many music legends who performed. At the time, Josh was going through his own health issues, and Tom wanted to know how that experience was for him. But also, he wanted to know how Josh ended up singing, of all things, David Bowie's Let's Dance at the show.
That was a Viking funeral from, if I've ever seen one, you know. And so he was talking to me about wanting it to be a celebration and that something Taylor would have wanted to be at. And Taylor wouldn't have wanted to be at, like, oh, some maudlin, you know, situation. And so he just threw Let's Dance at me. And I was like, of course. You know, absolutely. And what's funny is that walking out there, that's all I could think of is that's what I want to do. You know, I just want to, there's something about taking in the moment that almost makes me want to move a little slower, you know, and a little more deliberate and just sort of like, you know, I was thankful for that moment because the sentiment of that song is, anytime that song comes on, anyone with half a brain goes, yeah, thank God this is on, you know.
Put on your wet shoes and dance the blues to the song they're playing on the radio.
I guess I was wondering what it was like to be at this sort of massive Viking funeral, as you call it, for your friend while you were dealing with your own sort of diagnosis, while you were dealing with a lot of other loss in your life?
It was at that point I was still staring down the barrel of not knowing what was going to happen, you know, so I was you know, as I said, I think the biggest takeaway and the thing I'm most thankful for is like an appreciation of the moment, you know, and taking moments out of the stealing them out of the sky and just making them yours. And by making them yours, I just mean feeling like I'm part of this, you know? So that, unbeknownst to this crowd of like 60,000 people,
yeah,
backstage, it was so familiar, you know, like a family affair, and so it felt so small, but it's like 100 people, it's like 100 different artists, and you know, there's a lot of people locked arms and sort of celebrating the chance to say goodbye together. I mean, that was the moment I really felt like I said goodbye.
Yeah,
I really it's an unforgettable moment. And at the end of the day, I'm just trying to like string unforgettable moments together, like popcorn around the Christmas tree here, you know?
Yeah. Have you come out of this with, and I've sort of been dancing around this, I guess, since you started talking at the very beginning. You don't strike me as a particularly spiritual man, you know, just knowing what I know of your music, but I realize there's nothing to be gleaned from that at all. Has this experience given you a new insight into some sort of spirituality? It kind of sounds like it.
Well, I've always had a connection. I was, you know, raised with the Bible being pounded into me, and
really?
I've always been. I think it was my a natural igniter for revolt, you know, because I think the first most important things to do is start asking questions and actually listening for answers. But there are some questions that simply can't be answered because my fragile, feeble mind is not equipped to understand certain things, and I'm okay with that too. And so I think the word spirituality is so nebulous, but it just suggests looking for some connection beyond your own understanding. And if that is the definition, then I've always been on the search for spirituality, looking for meaning, and knowing that the world is actually filled with magic, is filled with things I could not understand, filled with enigmas, things that don't make sense, yet here they are in existence anyways. And music has always been my way to say those things, you know, like I'm not a poet, but I do write poetry and play guitar for a living. I'm one fire away from Kumbaya.
There's a lot of analysis of your guitar playing, and one thing that keeps on coming up, sort of just a general way, is that Josh Homme's earliest guitar teacher taught him polka, and that's the reason that he plays guitar the way that he does. But as someone who's actually listened to a little bit of polka, I'd like to dig into that a little bit. How did that happen? What kind of stuff were you being taught? Were you asking for Roll Out the Barrel, or were you asking for Stairway to Heaven?
I was asking for Hairway to Steven. I think if you were to just take Noah Knows.
Boom, cha, boom, cha, boom, cha, boom, cha. Do we have it? Can we just listen to a little bit of it? Oh, yeah. Boom, cha, boom, cha, boom, cha. So talk me through how polka shows up in that.
Well, that boom-ba, 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 boom-ba is straight out of a polka playbook, as if it were in a beer hall in Germany somewhere. And unintentionally, I mean, it's sort of in reflection, I've realized how that permeates so much of what I've done.
Did that guitar teacher you had who taught you polka ever hear No One Knows? Did he ever get in touch or anything about it?
You know, his name was Tom Polonsky, which is utterly polka-ish of a name.
Very much so.
And, you know, I took guitar lessons from 9 years old till about 11. And I never learned any bar chords. All I learned was boom, 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 that, yeah, this, that, that. And I think in the time I was really frustrated by it. And so it drove me to either give up guitar or start writing music. So at 9 years old, I was 10 years old. I was, you know, I was always hearing sounds in my head. You know, you're walking down the street and that's out of rhythm. And so I think I was always singing along to my own soundtrack. And, you know, that's why I wanted to play guitar, you know, was to get it out, you know,
Your options were limited. You didn't have an expressive vocabulary in your guitar playing. You had to create your own because your guitar teacher had taught you such a regimented style.
I see now, coming from such a rigid, you know, set of rules, that when left to my own devices, I was like, fine, I'll have none of that. There is no rules. There must be no rules. I will sort of amble through the fog and find my own things. And I think that's why, as a guitar player, there are huge swaths of guitar playing that are blind spots that I know nothing about. But I can play you something that makes sense but is strange, you know, that is ultimately off kilter a bit. I could learn about these blind spots I have, but I look at them as, I look at those blind spots as like a wonderful blessing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like you find your way anyway.
Yeah.
If you want to find your way.
Yeah. And, you know? And it brings back to that idea of like the beginner's mind. And if we approach everything as if we don't, if that painting has not already been painted for us and it's blank for us, what can we actually get to do?
Well, I think, you know, I almost don't always feel so great about my responsibility in it, but the concept of detuning, right? So in Caius, one of the reasons that I wanted to detune is because I wanted something that was mine. And there was no example of tuning down to B and C in standard tuning. Yeah. There was no such thing. I think maybe Black Sabbath was tuning some songs in D, but I'd never heard them before. I was just a kid in the desert with a very small record collection. And I was like, I wonder if you just do this, what happens? You know, if I'd had a guitar teacher, the first thing that would have told me is that's not allowed.
Yeah.
You can't, but it is allowed. It's allowed because that's what I want to do. And because this simply can do it. So everything is allowed, you know, and it became such a thing that now there's like 7-string guitars with Bs on them. You know?
Yeah.
And there's, it sort of gave way to a lot of heavy metal, some of which I like and much of which I don't, but that doesn't really matter if I like it or not. It sort of opened the doorway to like this thought that going, whoa, 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 whoa. And so I started playing out of bass amps and these things. I wouldn't have had the chance to find who I am and do the right thing the wrong way if I hadn't had that beginning from polka, you know.
Okay, let me close off this way. We've talked a little bit about like how the act of making art and like the act of performance and like the act of like getting up on stage, whether it's be at Queen's shows or that Taylor show we were talking about, was like really helpful to you to like get through some hard times that you were going through and sort of really make you realize the, you know, that all that sort of matters is that moment that you can present on stage, and then the future is an illusion and the past is nothing but a memory. It doesn't really exist either, you know, and you're just trying to collect this, like you said, like popcorn string of beautiful moments, and you're collecting them with your shows. But what about the act of touring? I mean, you've been on the road since you were a kid, minus the pandemic. How has like being with the band, falling into the old rhythms of touring, the structure of your day when you're touring, how has that helped you process all of this as well?
I mean, that's actually what makes it more difficult because,
really?
You know, essentially touring is if you just took everyone that you really truly loved and wanted to be around, and then you just put them here and you said, okay, see you. I'm going to go play to people I don't know, or essentially strangers. I'm going to put my life in their hands, sort of, you know. It can be challenging to, and I think, you know, we've been so blessed to do so well, which is always a shock to me, you know, that doing well, that success can turn you into a bitter old crank, and that sucks, you know, and that's not what I want. It's like, so it puts so much importance on the shows for me that they have to be different. They have to be just for tonight, and they have to feel real to me. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've felt that it wasn't a good show and someone says, well, it was great. And it's like stabbing me in the chest. I'm like, don't say another word. I don't want to, you know, because so it puts a lot of importance for me that the show is something that I can be, that I wanted, I feel proud to be part of, and that it's, you know, I guess I want it really bad, you know, because there's a major sacrifice to do it.
Josh, I'm so excited people are going to get to see these shows. Thanks for your extra time.
Of course.
And thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Stompin' Tom.
Josh Homme from Manna Queens of the Stone Age. Their new record is called In Time's New Roman, and it's out now.
That's Queens of the Stone Age with a new song called Paper Machete. Before that, you heard Stomping Tom Powers' conversation with band frontman Josh Homme. Their latest album, In Time's New Roman, is out now. The band starts their Canadian tour April 1st in Calgary before hitting the U.S. in May. And check out our other episode today. Kelvin Redvers will tell you about making his Indigenous thriller and how the movie moved audiences to screams, but also to tears of joy and pride. I'm AC Rowe, sitting in for Tom Power. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.